View Press on Why Unions Matter. At 10 on Flashpoints, the West Coast premiere of the documentary The Corporate Coup d'Etat, which The Hollywood Reporter calls a horror film of the most realistic kind. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D. May speaks with co-producers Anna Nicholas and Brian Schnipper of the play Mala by Melinda Lopez. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews abstract artist Amy Bernstein. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use a mobile app and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists.
Would I approve waterboarding? You bet your ass I'd approve it. You bet your ass.
But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. I'm going to take such good care of women's health care issues, you won't even believe it.
I thought that the Prime Minister's statement that it was absurd, it was an absurd idea, was nasty. I want surveillance of certain mosques, okay? I am the chosen one. Somebody had to do it, so I'm taking on China. In my opinion, you vote for a Democrat, you're being very disloyal to Jewish people, and you're being very disloyal to Israel. We're looking at that very seriously, birthright citizenship, where you have a baby on our land, you walk over the border, have a baby, congratulations, the baby is now a U.S. citizen. It's frankly ridiculous.
I'm an extremely stable genius.
Yes, a stable genius. Oh, my goodness. Hey, this is KBOO 90.7 in Portland, Oregon. This is Abe and Joe, talk radio show. Abe Proctor.
Yeah, I'm kind of dumbfounded by that little montage of wisdom.
I thought we should really understand the president, whose profundity is enormous.
Right. Well, because it's either that or we just run out and burn the place down.
Well, I don't think burning. We have too much burning already.
Yeah.
Because of the soybean market.
Right. I'm sure there's fine people on both
sides. Both sides,
of the
right.
Soybean market.
Well, the U.S. Under Trump is not dealing with China on soybeans, and therefore the opportunity for Brazil to cash in is compelling. Plus, they have a dictator, and, you know, why not?
Yeah, China's trade minister, I believe it was their trade minister, said earlier, or actually last week, that there are plenty of other providers of agricultural products that are ready to step into the void that the United States has vacated.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, whether or not you put much stock in international trade, it is, in fact, the world we live in.
What do you mean, put much? It's what happens.
Well, there's many among our listenership who would say that, you know, protectionism of international markets for American goods should not be a priority, or we should prioritize other things. But
okay.
Nevertheless, there it is.
Okay. All right. 231-8187 is the number to call. We're going to bash Trump.
Yeah, we are.
We are. Unendingly, inevitably, absolutely, and harshly.
We are. We should remind you, though, this is KBOO, 90.7
yeah.
FM.
Yeah.
This is the
Abe and Joe. Didn't I say
talk
that?
Radio. You said, I don't know if you said the name of this.
I can't
station.
Remember. You know,
I know.
Such
I know.
Nice weather, and, you know, I'm getting on, and I don't pay much attention.
Yeah, we have bashed Trump before, and we're going to bash Trump again in the future. Sometimes we really are faced with such a miasma of stuff.
Is it a miasma or a miasma?
Either
this is
way,
the kind of thing I worry about a lot.
Cesspool?
Cesspool.
Okay.
Okay.
It's just bad. It's really bad.
Fecal pond.
Yeah. We had everything this last week from Trump playing up claims that he is the king of Israel.
Did he really say
that?
He
did. Somebody else said that he was the king of Israel and that Jews welcome him like he's the second coming of God. So Trump saw fit.
Wait, there was no first coming for Jews.
I thought there was. There was the whole garden and the and
no,
all
no, that.
That
doesn't. That isn't the coming. That's the creating.
That's the creating.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, okay. Well, my terminology is way off then.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Okay. To paraphrase,
you were raised as a Catholic. What can I say?
I was not raised as a Catholic.
You were not raised as a Catholic.
To paraphrase,
what can I say?
I don't know. To paraphrase, somebody said that the Jews think Trump is God, and that he's their king, and he saw fit to reinforce that with his tweeting.
Well, I don't like to generalize about a people, but Jews are smarter than that.
Well, it would turn out you're right. The response from Jews in the United States has been overwhelmingly negative. Apparently, they don't think he's either the king of Israel or God.
Well, there's this tendency to think of the Jewish people as if they are of one mind because of Israel. And that is not true.
Yeah, we had an incident earlier this year, as a matter of fact, when Trump addressed a Jewish political action group and referred to the Prime Minister of Israel as the Prime Minister of the American Jews who are in the audience, which is weird. That's really weird.
Yes, that is really weird.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing we're talking about.
There's a lot of weirdness going on here.
Trump was also going to meet with the Prime Minister of Denmark, but pulled out of that meeting because she rebuffed his offer to purchase Greenland.
Well, actually, he was going to meet with the Queen.
The Queen of Denmark?
Yeah.
Oh.
They have a queen.
Yeah, that's right. They do have a queen. They also have a prime minister. Unless
you weren't wrong about
incredibly mistaken.
You weren't wrong about who he felt insulted by. And she just said it was absurd to buy Greenland.
Now, this might seem kind of like a lark, but I think it's indicative of something much deeper, which is Trump is totally disengaged and detached from any norms of propriety or of sovereignty. He literally sees chunks of territory as things to be bought and sold.
That's all he knows.
That's all he knows. I mean, it's a colonialist mindset if there ever was one.
Well,
right?
It's beyond that. It's exploitive beyond colonialism, actually. It's a short-term money game.
It is indeed. Well, no, I don't think so, actually. I think he was making that offer with an eye towards the petro resources that can be exploited from a rapidly thawing Greenland.
Well, he's sort of funny. You know, he didn't show up for the part of the G7 meeting where they were discussing the environment.
No, he didn't. But I think we need to look at this a little. I mean, if Trump is willing to just casually make an offer to purchase Greenland and then get pissed off when he's rebuffed, you got to wonder, well, which parts of the United States is he going to be willing to dangle, before other purchasers?
Well, he's already giving away a lot of public land.
Yeah,
really,
that's true.
Seriously.
He is, yeah.
Some of it very pretty, some of it very important. Some of it both, pretty and important. Well, look, our task today, and you are welcome to join us in this, is the absolute destruction of the intellectual pretensions of Donald Trump. And I think it's a fair goal, and I think we're going to have to do it more than once because there's so much to cover. But there are people calling us, and maybe, conceivably, there's somebody who wants to defend Trump. I don't know. 231-8187, Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi there. Well, you know, I lay the responsibility of the burning of the Amazon right at Trump's feet.
Yes.
Because he made these lousy deals that denied American farmers the contracts they should have gotten. And here's the thing. Do you remember when they had the big housing bust? They made, like, home loans real easy.
Yeah.
And then they came in and took everybody's home.
Yes.
And a lot of the venture capitalists bought up these homes for pennies on the dollar. Thousands and thousands of homes. I think the same thing is happening with agriculture. I think that Trump is essentially by bankrupting, you know, there's a tremendous amount of farmers going bankrupt right now, and that these farms are going to go to gigantic agribusiness. This is a plan, in a sense, to do the same thing that what they did with the housing and move a lot of the America's farmlands into the hands of the very well venture capital.
I agree with you, except that I think it's been going on long before Trump. I also think it's important to understand how farming works in America. If you're successful, you have a bumper crop, and you have, let's say, 80 acres in soybeans, you then are persuaded to buy bigger equipment and more land and go into debt to get 190 acres of soybeans so you can make even more money. The problem is the soybeans are a market. At some point, that market crashes or goes down, and you're stuck with a huge bill for the land and the equipment. And this has been a fatal flaw in American agriculture for a long time. So it's not just Trump. It's a it's really a pattern of American of worldwide agriculture.
I think he's accelerating it, and he's not the American farmer's friend at all.
No.
And so both the burning of the Amazon and the bankrupting of America's farmers, I feel he's responsible for that.
Well, I'm willing to let him take responsibility. That's cool. Okay. Thanks for the call, man.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I guess we should take the next caller. Paul, you're next.
Good morning.
Morning.
And speaking of insanity... First, I'd like to start with a quote by a guy named Solzhenitsyn. Mm-hmm. For men to do great evil, they must first believe they are doing good.
Okay.
And maybe a lot of the listenership may not be aware of it, but there's some rather serious things going on at KBOO these days, and people should get their pencil and paper handy, because I'll give them a time of date in a minute.
Okay.
But
make this really short.
Yeah,
Paul.
I don't want to discuss internal KBOO affairs on the air.
But yeah, I know we don't want to discuss.
You can indeed tell us about meetings and so on, but just do that, please.
Yeah, well, so there's going to be a meeting at the general membership meeting September 14th, noon to 3 at the Clinton Street Theater. And there's some people on the board meeting or seminar someplace to read a book on how nonprofits should be run, and they think that KBOO should do that, and KBOO has always ran its own way and not the way people said it should, and surprise, surprise, 50 years later, we are the only surviving member of the Crab Nebula, and the current people that have been running the board...
We're not going to talk about internal KBOO issues on the air.
But
if you do want to show up at the meeting, you're more than welcome.
I appreciate your telling us about the meeting on the 14th, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's go back to Trump. That's really our focus. I am so addicted to dumping Trump that I'm afraid I'm going to cover it a lot, and I'm not sure how many people really want to hear it, except that it's so funny. In an ironical and horrible way. Let's go to another caller, 231-8187. Pear, you're on the air.
Whoa. Okay. All right, Pear, give us a call back. We'll see if we can get you through. Trump has been actively tweeting this morning.
Today?
Already? Yeah, well, he does all the time. Yeah, 25 minutes ago, he tweeted, "The G7 was a great success for the USA and all. Lamestream media coverage bore no relationship to what actually happened in France. Fake news. It was great." Okay, well, let's dissect this a little bit.
What great? What does that mean, great?
Well, I don't know what that means because Trump said it, so it could mean
anything.
Just about anything.
Or nothing.
Well, he's claiming that the media coverage of the G7 summit bears no resemblance to reality. We know that he ditched the meeting about climate, right? I guess he's saying that was inaccurately reported, that he was actually there.
I don't think he'd claim that his supernatural powers put him invisibly there.
So I'm not sure what he's going on about here, except I think to reinforce the very impressionable impressions of the people who support him. I want to talk about this a little bit more because I think there's something very ominous building here. Now, we talked about how this person, Wayne Allen Root is his name, who referred to the president as the King of the Jews. Wayne Allen Root is a broadcaster. He describes himself as a former Jew who is now an evangelical Christian.
A former Jew.
Who is an evangelical
Christian.
Does
that mean they pasted
Christian.
The bottom part on?
I really don't know how that works. He's self-described that way. He says, quote, "Jew turned evangelical Christian." That's
okay.
How he describes himself. So he referred to Trump as the King of Israel, said the Jews view him as the second coming of God. Trump then, a few days later, referred to himself in the context of taking on China, whatever that means, as the chosen one. This is messianic language.
Yes,
right?
It is.
This is.
I would just say it's messy language, but messianic.
Messy, yeah.
It's true.
Megalomaniacal language.
Crazy talk.
But I think we dismiss it as simply crazy talk at our peril. I can't really think of a more dangerous narrative in American politics right now than for an elected president to claim some sort of divine mantle. It's more dangerous to representative self-government as we understand it than perhaps any other political trend going on right now.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things about Hitler.
Nice segue.
His propagandist said that the wisdom and greatness of God was vested not in Jesus Christ but in Adolf Hitler.
Interesting.
Really, they said that.
He was also a famous atheist who outlawed religion.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
Well, another religion.
Right, indeed.
A state religion. Yeah.
So this is deeply troubling to me, and I think should be deeply troubling to anybody who is interested in preserving, such as they are, our institutions and norms.
Well, I think it's blasphemy. If you're at all religious, it's just straight out blasphemy.
If you're at all religious, it's straight out blasphemy. But I'm guessing that his evangelical followers don't feel the same way. In fact, they're hearing this and going, yeah, right? So this next election, next year, is going to turn on a number of factors, not the least of which is turnout, right? One of the reasons that Trump was able to win this last time around is a lot of people who helped put Barack and Obama into office for two consecutive presidential elections didn't show up.
Right, a lot of hand-sitting.
Turnout is going to be enormous in this next election. And if there's any way to get out his religious base, which is a not insignificant chunk of the electorate, is if he dons this messianic mantle that he seems to be putting on. And this is toxic to a secular representative democracy like our own.
Well, absolutely. And as long as you raise the thing, if you know anybody who is 18 or older, you owe it to the nation not to tell them how to vote, but to tell them to vote.
Yep. Here's an interesting fact. For any young listeners who might be out there, I know you're all listening on the internet tubes rather Maybe. Than on the old wireless.
Maybe.
Right. But here it is. Millennials, if all of you, or even not even all of you, if a significant majority of you register and turn out to vote, you will, in your numbers alone, be able to eclipse the voting power of the baby boom generation. Millennials, you right now are the largest voting bloc in the United States electorate.
Is that really true?
It is really true.
Huh.
Millennials of voting age outnumber baby boomers of voting, who are all of voting age right now. And let's face it, who's really trashed the world? Joe, your generation. So what, young people.
Wait a minute.
Oh, that's absolutely true.
Intergenerational war. Prove me wrong. Is not appropriate.
Prove me wrong. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Pear.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Well, you know, your first caller brings up a very interesting point, because Trump's policies are encouraging the burning of the Amazon, which is very true. But
yes.
The thing is, this whole process started before Obama, Trump. It began when Lula da Silva was overthrown, and then Dilma Rousseff, and that happened during the Obama administration when our intelligence agencies were spying on Dilma's phone. And so you see what's going on here is that, Trump is evil. Trump is everything you say he is. But you got to watch out for these other people who have been in power before Trump, and they will probably be in power after Trump is gone. This is the thing that worries me.
So
and
wait, you're worried about the intelligence community specifically, or about larger capital, or what?
Well, actually both, because they work kind of hand in hand. But the thing is that when Trump is gone, my fear is that people will breathe a big sigh of relief, and they'll kind of fall in with the spook community, who are very, they're very intelligent. They don't go over the top like Trump does. And I think this is my worry.
Oh, okay. Thanks for a new fear.
Well, just be aware what, sort of the second level of what might happen.
I do believe the intelligence community has its own agendas, or I say it in the plural. But I also think that at this point, everybody with an ounce of patriotism or whatever is very, very worried about the unpredictable and craziness of the president. So,
well, that's true, but look at it this way. You know, Trump is a fascist. Okay, I'll
yeah,
give you that.
Yeah.
But the CIA has been installing fascists around the world for years.
That's true. But, you know, the fascists that they installed did not have the degree of power that Trump does.
Well, they're...
Except in their own countries.
Well, that's bad. So you're gonna sacrifice the other countries for our well-being?
Oh, I'm not. This is silly. Yes, no. Yes, no.
Okay. Well, anyway, beware what might come after Trump.
I think that's a reasonable fear. My overarching position on the American situation is that like many empires, it goes up and up and up, and then it starts going down, 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 and we may be past that up, up, up point.
Let's hope.
Okay, you unpatriotic person.
Hey, thanks for the call, Perry.
Thanks for the call.
Speaking of what might come after Trump, and we've hinted around at this on this program, but I want to lay out here what I think is a very real possibility here.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, there's a three-legged stool that I believe conservatives are erecting to turn us into essentially South Africa.
They're erecting a stool?
A stool.
Okay.
They want to essentially turn us into South Africa, meaning enshrining permanent minority rule, white minority rule.
Well, yeah.
Okay. There are three aspects to
that. That's the old South Africa, I might add.
The old South Africa, yes. The first is voter suppression.
Yes.
Which we're seeing all over the place.
Yes.
With renewed vigor now that the Supreme Court has ruled that that gerrymandering is, in effect, legal.
Yeah, and nothing being done about the Russian invasion of our voting system.
Indeed, but that's not one of the legs of the stool.
Oh, okay.
The second, I just mentioned it, is gerrymandering.
Okay.
The creation of districts to enshrine permanent white majorities.
Mm-hmm.
In enough districts to maintain a permanent representative majority in Congress
right.
or the State House or whatever elective body you're talking about. And the third is the packing of the judicial system with conservative justices.
That one is really scary.
That one is really scary. And that one's been going along on a lot longer than most people realize. We've had for a few decades now a consistent shortage in a lot of vacancies in judicial seats, right? This goes back to the Bill Clinton administration when the Republicans first decided they were going to start hindering and blocking the appointment of judges by Democratic presidents. Not just the Supreme Court I'm talking about, but the federal judiciary. And this is being duplicated, although to a lesser extent, at the state and local level. This started back in the Clinton administration. The seats remained open and then were subsequently filled by Republican presidents. This is a pattern we can trace back a few decades now. So between these two things, or these three things, voter suppression, gerrymandering, and the packing of the judiciary, we have a blueprint for the enshrinement of permanent white minority rule in this country. If you don't think it can happen, you're not paying close enough attention.
Well,
and if you throw in something like mass incarceration, which is in itself a continuation of first slavery and then Jim Crow, that is just the nail in the coffin.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned the role or the discouragement of the role that persons of color would and should be playing in the United States. This pattern is obviously a pattern that wants to do away with the rights of persons of color, period, and I might add women. And the attack on women is in the area of reproductive rights more than anything else. So all of this comes to a reactionary base and is part of a support for a fascist system.
Yeah, indeed.
So this is real.
Yeah,
I agree
with
you.
The groundwork is there. It has been laid. It has been going on for a long time now.
Yes.
This is yet another reason why, in so many ways, history is passing through the eye of a needle right now.
Is this a biblical reference?
No. Well, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe a biblically based metaphor.
Okay.
In so many ways, in terms of climate, in terms of the dominance of global capitalism and the concentration of wealth, in terms of the oppression of traditionally marginalized communities, all of these things are coming to the fore at once. The decisions we make over the next 5 to 10 years are going to determine how the next 50 to 75 years play out.
I agree.
A crucial time for people who care about things like representative democracy, who believe in markets that are fair, in all sorts of things, and believe in preserving the planet for our progeny. Everybody needs to turn out right now, not just to cast their votes. That's probably the most important thing. But be visible on the streets, in the media, be communicating with your representatives, be doing everything you can to preserve this fragile soap bubble of democracy that we believe is the way things will always be. That's a critical failing among the American left, I think, is that a lot of people believe that we will always be a representative democracy. We will always have these institutions, and they will always have their integrity. But viewed against the broader sweep of history, we are in a very fragile and very new state of affairs here. And it's going to take work to make sure it doesn't go away.
Well, I sort of agree with you. I think the idea that the left, whatever the hell that is nowadays, is in a naive position of believing in the system is wrong. I think that most people in the left still have a quasi-Marxist analysis. That is, that there's a ruling class that we get to vote for Tweedledee or Tweedledum, but never Tweedlebright. And that, in fact, the system is pretty close to rigged for capitalism and against the working class.
Yes, all of that is true. It's an unsatisfactory system, the one in which we live. But again, viewed against the broader sweep of history, it's a far better state of affairs than most human beings have ever enjoyed in history.
I won't argue with that.
All right. So if you're interested in preserving that, or even a reasonable facsimile of that, the next few years are absolutely critical.
But I also have to insist that this is built on the backs of everybody who is poor, all of the third world, and all of the poorer people in the United States, particularly people of color.
And thus it has always been.
Well, and thus has it always been, yeah. Yes. And I would point out that the American working class has been fed so much propaganda, including terror television, ooh, the spooks, the scary creatures out there, all this nonsense. It's a distraction which can be absolutely fatal.
Yeah. And the gravity of the moment, I think, is magnified when because we're talking not only about preserving our current state of affairs, such as it is, attempting to halt the environmental devastation of the earth, attempting to stop the juggernaut of global capitalism. These things are all of paramount importance. But not just that. Not just, stemming these dark tides that are rising. But we're actually on the cusp, I think, of a transformation in consciousness, right? Just look at what's happening in the national discourse right now. We're talking about race in a way that I don't believe we ever have before. We're talking about...
Can you be more specific about that one?
I'm talking about a widespread acknowledgement of things like white privilege and the structural nature of racism. I think we're finally on a large scale beginning to understand racism, not just as a group of people who don't like people who look like they do, but rather a deeply embedded structural system that has conveyed advantages to one group of people over a long period of time and denied them to other groups of people over that same period of time. We're finally seeing a shift in consciousness and an understanding of the systemic nature of racism. We're coming to grips with gender and what that means, and we're opening doors for people to live and be their true and best selves in a way that has never happened before in human history. We're on the edge of a new enlightenment is what I'm saying, and it would be one of history's great ironies if we let that slip away and we all slid collectively backward into this coming age of capitalist fascist domination and environmental degradation.
I agree with you. I do think, however, that what you've said, absolutely true, underestimates the enormous power of and the intentions of the ruling classes, which have varied in persona but not in attitude over the years. But in general, I think your analysis is correct.
Yeah. So all the more reason to work hard these next few years.
Well, yeah, we're going to have to be a little preachy in the next few months, and I hope people will tolerate it.
That'll be a change.
Yeah, really. Okay, let's go to the phones. 231-8187. Harry, you're on the air.
Greetings, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to talk about this Trump and the 2020 election. Is that there's still a possibility that he will win?
Oh, it's a good possibility.
Yeah, and I listen. One of my favorite podcasts is the David Pakman Show.
I don't know it.
Okay, it's a progressive show, and he was saying that the Republicans, 80 to 90% still support Trump, so they will vote. They will vote for Trump just because Trump is not a Democrat.
Mm, okay.
The Democrats, well, of course, 90, the only 5% of Democrats support Trump. So, but
that many.
So what it comes to is the independents, how that can swing the election. But they also mentioned that, remember, only 50% of Americans vote. So that's why they can still possibly win.
Yeah, no, your analysis is unfortunately correct. I think there are constituencies that are really important. The millennials, persons of color, all of these people need to be motivated. And it's going to be maybe challenging because the Democrats have an ability to select the least exciting candidate out of a bunch of them. So,
yeah.
You know, that's a fear of mine. And my position at this point is we can't even expect a really, truly progressive government. We have to go back to what was normal, which is a normally dominated rational capitalist system. That's the best we can expect, I'm afraid, in this election. And I'm very sad about that. But that's my analysis.
I don't know that it's the best we can expect, but we can get to that a little bit.
We can argue about that. Anyway, thank you for the call.
Yeah, well, can I talk about the Amazon?
Yeah,
yes.
Okay,
sure.
Well, okay, these fires have been going. I haven't figured out how long these fires have been going on, and how many. Has it been 4 months?
Well, it's been. I don't know the exact amount of time, but it's
slashing, or is people actually slashing and burning it, and they're taking the timber? They're not sure exactly what's going on, but there's these major fires that are putting smoke. I mean. The capital city, I think it's San Paulo, went dark. And it was like, and the why we should worry about it is this smoke and particulates are at the equator. And when volcanoes go off at the equator, that's when we have really bad cooling periods. They discovered that's why in the early 1800s we had a cooling period was because a volcano on the equator went off. I mean, St. Helens, when it went off, well, it's northern latitudes and
yeah, you're right.
It blows away.
Yeah, the Coriolis forces are stronger in the equatorial regions. Right.
Yeah, so yeah. This is a really, people should really worry about this and see if the next year or so things start really cooling off. Then that's the only way we know, you know, or stop the burning right away.
Well, there's irony in that because when you have a lot of carbon dioxide released, you create a phenomenon of heat. But before we get into the science of that, I wanted to agree with you in essence. It's been about 3 years where the equatorial forests have been quietly burned everywhere. But under this current fascist government in Brazil, it's a real serious pattern by a leadership that it says that they think the United States did a much better job of killing its aboriginal people than they did, and they feel bad about it. I mean, this is their leadership's statement. The fact of the matter is the slaughter of native peoples, of indigenous peoples all over the world, continues and is a part and parcel of a destruction of the world, literally of the world. And in terms of the Amazon forest, what's happening, just to be clear, it's being cleared largely for soybeans and wheat and things like that.
Livestock
and cattle,
too.
And cattle. And it's being done essentially at the behest of landowners and would-be landowners in a region which used to be essentially dominated by native peoples. And in fact, the process is, as you suggested, first they cut the timber, then they burn the land. And that's to clear the land for things like soybeans. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call, man.
Okay, then.
Yeah, thanks very much. Okay. I mentioned, why exactly do forest fires or volcanoes in equatorial regions, why is that spread more quickly around the planet? Okay, I'm going to explain that real quickly.
Oh, go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I mentioned something called the Coriolis force, which is what happens when you have...
I used to go with her.
With Coriolis?
Oh, yeah.
Did you go to a cotillion with Coriolis?
Well, she's a little cold.
Okay, when you have a rotating sphere like the Earth, and clinging to that rotating sphere, you have a thin atmosphere like we do.
Yeah.
There's an interaction between the two where the atmosphere is sort of sliding across the surface of the rotating sphere beneath it, if you can picture that, right?
Yeah. Oh, I do picture that.
So the radial velocity of the Earth at the equator, well, it's the same radial velocity all the way from the equator to the North Pole, but the actual velocity is faster. You're moving faster when you're at the equator because you're at the outside of the Earth's radius.
And you've got a longer way to go.
You got a longer way to go in the same period of time. So by definition, you're moving faster. That's why if you have, say, a volcano in the equatorial regions, you have a greater chance of that pollution being spread over a wider area because of the Coriolis force,
right?
Because of the action between a rotating sphere and the gases that are clinging to it.
And I have to say this, there's a confusion here between what happens when the skies grow darkened and cold comes as a result of natural phenomena like volcanoes.
Or fires.
Or fires. And the fact of the poisoning of the atmosphere with CO2, which is what's going on right now.
Two different effects.
Will they cancel each other out? I don't think so.
No, they will not. All right, Michael, good morning.
Good morning. Well, first, a little humor. There's a very funny satirical website called the Babylon Bee.
The what?
I'm familiar with it.
And it's kind of a Christian orientation. And they said that Trump was horrified when someone told him what happened to the last guy that declared himself king of the Jews.
Yeah, it didn't end well for him.
No.
The last guy who was accused of being of claiming that, it went really bad.
Yeah.
Actually, did
Jesus ever call himself the king of the Jews?
No. That was a label given to harm him by the Romans, who were paralyzed in fear at that point of rebellions out of the Middle East.
But a guy a little bit later, Bar Kokhba, he called himself the king of the Jews.
Did.
It didn't end well for him either.
No, it never does. No.
Sorry, go ahead, Michael.
And Trump was very cross when he heard about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dear.
Okay.
Oh, dear indeed. Yes. Okay. The main point, the latest, you guys know Sam Harris? You know who he is?
Rings a bell. Tell us.
Sam Harris is a sort of online intellectual that runs his own podcast. Very, very incredibly smart guy. Mm-hmm. His latest podcast, starting at minute 33, has a takedown of Trump that is so awesome that you guys would probably aspire to do something like that. I mean, it was really excellent.
I have no aspirations whatsoever, but okay.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, okay. Well, it's fine. You're retired now, right?
Oh, yeah. I have nothing to do with anything. I don't even know why I'm here.
A lot of people don't know why I'm here.
Okay, sorry.
You and that admiral who was Perot's vice presidential pick?
What? Yeah, Stockdale. Yeah, I remember him.
Oh, Stockdale.
Yeah. Who got up and said, who am I and why am I here? And then he looked like he didn't know the answer.
Yeah, right.
But anyways, so he does this incredibly good job of taking down Trump. And then he does an equivalently good job of saying, in his opinion, and yeah, he really expresses it well, that some of the antics of the far left are going to help Trump get reelected. So I think that both of those ought to be taken seriously. If you don't want another 4 years of Trump,
well, far left. First of all,
crazy stuff.
Here's the problem with what he apparently says: there ain't no far left. There ain't no far left. If in fact social Democrats were to take the leadership of the Democratic Party and were to get elected, it would simply be putting it at the most similar to the situation of Northern European capitalist economies.
They won't get there if all you see in the news is violent antics of the black bloc.
Oh, come on, man. That is such a minority of people. Who cares, really?
Yeah, it's not a minority of the coverage, though.
No, because the coverage will always exploit efforts to change the system, always attack it, and will always establish itself as the establishment voice.
Yeah,
When the new left refuses to,
there ain't no new left.
Strongly enough.
Okay, this is something for another longer discussion. But go ahead.
Anyway, I encourage you guys to listen to that podcast because.
Well, say the name again,
Sam Harris.
Sam Harris.
Sam Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S, and you can just look him up in any podcast thing and find him. And this thing I'm talking about starts at minute 33 of the latest one, and it's just one of the best things I've ever heard anybody say verbally.
Okay. Yeah, well, okay. Thanks for the information. I'm sure people will try it out.
Hey, thanks for the call, Michael. You know,
where's the women?
I don't know. Well,
no. I
are you talking in the context of this program or more generally in your life? I can't really.
I've got nothing to comment on either one. I think I'm concerned that we're not hearing enough from women.
I would agree. I want to touch on something Michael said.
Yeah.
You said you know, the antics of the Black Bloc, for lack of a better term, are so trivial and so minor in the grand scheme of things that they're not going to.
Well, they're being blown out of proportion.
Well, they are. Yeah. The Black Bloc and Antifa loom large in right-wing media coverage, particularly in places like Fox News and in the blogosphere.
Yeah, but somebody sneezing would loom large.
Well, indeed. But again, you know, you look at, I talked earlier about how important turnout is going to be in next year's election. What is going to motivate the right to come out? Trump donning a religious mantle is one thing. And the hyping up of this alleged fear of out-of-control violent leftists
socialists.
Is another thing.
I think he calls them socialists and communists.
And communists and all sorts of other very inaccurate terms.
Really?
This is, Michael's right. This is a real thing. The way that narrative is being spun on the right, and let's face it, the right is not known for accessing a plethora of views when it comes to news consumption.
Yeah, but I do want to make one point. It is impossible to say to people who are in reaction to Trump and looking for a progressive alternative, you shouldn't do what you're doing, because that is something people will do in this relatively democratic society.
Yeah, that's true.
So you have to live with that. You have to accept it. And in fact, you have to be able to, pardon my expression, exploit it to the end of defeating Trump. And that's doable.
Yeah.
That's really doable. You're not gonna be able to create a candidacy that's going to silence the right. It's not going to happen.
You know, we haven't really talked about the Democratic horse race for president.
Oh, we're saving,
and I don't think we should yet.
Yeah.
But there's a real opening right now to do it. I'm just going to let it go right on by. Let's go to Jeremy.
Jeremy, you're on the air.
Well, I'm thinking I'm going to get right off because I'm quite bothered that no women have called, and if I take up more room, there'll be less of a chance. I don't think you should put any more men. You guys talk too much, so the answer is not for you to stop not for you to stop taking male callers, but really try to figure out why women don't call. And they did. I mean, it's only some weeks. You know, I haven't called in months.
I have to say, looking at, having had some experience with this and looking at the patterns, it tends to be men who are assertive on the radio. That is not a justification for there not being enough women. And indeed, you could criticize us on that score.
Well,
but I'm not comfortable with being quiet.
If you guys don't put the ball down and ask other guys like me to put it down, which I'm quite ready to do, then how are women supposed to take it up? So I have a suggestion. You want to talk about Black Bloc, the spokesman for Pop Mob. Hopefully you know what that is.
Yes.
Popular Mobilization. Yes. You know, get Effie Baum on, maybe several weeks in a row.
Wow. Okay. That's an interesting idea.
Women, and then women will call in.
Well, you're probably right. There ought to be, in fact.
Because I'd rather talk to her than you anyway.
Well, okay, Jeremy. I got to say this. We do not have an evenly distributed pattern of talk radio. Whether or not this is the show which ought to do that.
Everyone has to do everything starting right now.
All right. Thanks for the call. We had to let you go there.
Yeah. I do want to remind people, the FCC makes the rules, and if you use certain kinds of words, we have to dump you.
Yep. Sorry about that. But not really that sorry about that. No. Okay. Coming up today on KBOO at 9, Alternative Radio, we hear from Michael Yates, labor educator and editorial director of the Monthly Review Press on Why Unions Matter. At 10 on Flashpoints, the West Coast premiere of the documentary The Corporate Coup d'Etat, which The Hollywood Reporter calls, quote, a horror film of the most realistic kind. At 11, Stage and Studio, D-May speaks with co-producers Anna Nicholas and Brian Schnipper of the play Mala by Melinda Lopez. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galvan interviews abstract artist Amy Bernstein. All of this and more coming up today on your community-supported radio station, KBOO. Now, the number to call, 503-231-8187. We would really love to hear from some women callers.
Of course.
You can also write into the show at the Facebook page. This is facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or you can tweet at HonestAbe72. Jack writes into the Facebook page to say, please correct your caller. The capital of Brazil is not Sao Paulo, it's Brasilia.
That's true. Yes. I missed that. I didn't notice that was misstated.
One more correction. CO2 is not a poison. Plants thrive from it.
That's true.
Please
also
look into the paleoclimatological record, at least a little.
A little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We are chastened, suitably chastened. Robbie, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry, I'm not a woman. I feel bad that occurred.
Never mind. We're going to just let that go. Go ahead.
Just wanted to let your listeners know, I'm sure they probably heard, but tonight is Bonds Over Borders. Basically, it's a great fundraiser raffle for Innovation Law Lab. Anyway, they can check out the website, KBOO, or Bonds Over Borders Facebook. But I wanted to mention, you know, a lot of this stuff with Trump, like, I'm actually concerned. My biggest concern with Trump right now is that Democrats are totally forgetting the world that we're living in. And just to remind all the listeners, but Occupy Wall Street, which I was heavily involved with, the Access Pipeline, Black Lives Matter, all occurred under the Obama administration. I'm not blaming Obama for it, but to give you an idea, years ago, you know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, I used to tell all my, you know, friends, family, that America is Nazi Germany, 1930. And mm-hmm. People used to get mad at me. They would get mad. They would say, Robbie, how dare you say that? You know, I can't believe you said that. You know, America is not anywhere as bad as you proclaim it to be. And then the moment that Trump got elected, everyone, I'm like, oh, America's Nazi Germany. And now people are like, oh my gosh, you're right. But here's the thing. If you look up an Associated Press story back from April in 2015, Bill Clinton told Donald Trump to run. When you look at the connections, Donald Trump was a Democrat before the year 2010. And if you look at him, he endorsed Hillary Clinton to run for 2016 in the year 2012. What I see is a problem with mass money. And here's the larger
extent. Yeah, that's true.
The Democratic race, what's going on, people aren't paying attention. We're thinking that, okay, well, we got to elect somebody, anybody who can win. You know, the blue, no matter who, blue army or whatever, like, I don't care who I vote for, but I'm going to vote blue.
You mean like never Trump?
Okay, I have a proposal for anybody that has ever said, well, I don't care who I vote for, you know, as long as I'm voting blue. Don't vote in the primary, because this is what's going to screw us up in the election this year, next year, just as it did in 2016. For those people that were okay to vote for Hillary Clinton, I wasn't, because I'm an activist and I vote for my ideals. I don't just vote like it's a team of sports. I vote for what I believe in. And I recommend the Democrats do that too, because when we don't have a backbone, that's what makes the ratchet effect work. The ratchet effect, if you aren't familiar, is basically we're torquing right. The centrists in the Democratic Party are completely taking us right. The idea that Bernie Sanders is a radical left person, would be promoting taking private property. A radical left person would be promoting for all sorts of ideals that are not this. We are promoting, like, the far left, as we're being branded, is promoting what people want. And that's what the Democrats kind of try to, they try to cater to us as if they are the progressive group, but they are not. Anyway, thanks a lot for your show. Yeah. I hope to see you out at Bonds Over Borders. We're making money for Innovation Law Lab. Y'all should check that out. Really good stuff. I'll take my answer off here.
Okay. You bet. Yeah. And we've been heavily promoting Bonds Over Borders on KBO.
KBO. Yeah. I just one comment. You got to start with where you're at. And I'll just let it go to that.
No, I'm not going to just let it go at that. I've been taking heat on the show for saying now for several months that even we as leftists and progressives need to make the Democrats our instrument at this moment in time. Because frankly, there is no alternative at the federal level. I'm all for third-party building movements, but really, if we wanted a viable third party right now to wield influence at the national level, that building process would have needed to have started a long, long time ago.
Oh, I agree.
So right now, like it or not, we've got to work through the Democrats. A lot of you don't like to hear that, but I'm saying to you, we really don't have any other choice right now. The stakes have risen too high.
Yeah, and I think this is a question not just of strategy, but morality. When you have an actual fascist and an incompetent one to a great extent, crazy one to a great extent, in power doing bad things and really doing a lot of bad things, you really have to get rid of that before you can get anywhere else. And I think that that's where I see it.
Yeah.
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 So yeah, the people can disagree with me, but you know, the notion of a third party, I remember Nader, I remember all these other things, and they always seem to go to the right in the end, not they, but the result of their work.
Yeah. So that's, I'll say it again. The Democrats must be our instrument right now. Here in Portland, there is a very strong primary challenge being mounted against Earl Blumenauer from the left. You know, so it's possible. You know, it's possible to push the center.
But I don't understand the strategy of that.
No?
No.
It seems pretty clear to me. You know, you elect a more progressive candidate, you gradually turn the party more progressive. That's been happening across the country. It happened significantly in the last congressional election.
Yeah, that's true. I think, though, we need to have you and I on the air need to have a serious discussion about what the best strategy is with incumbent Democrats.
I think that's
an important issue.
Not today, though.
Not today.
George, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention an author and a book from long ago, Penny Lerneau's book, Cry of the People. And I have an old hardcover copy. And I noticed the other day reading it, she was talking about the 1970s when the Brazilian government was ousting Brazilian farmers from the Amazon region to set up cattle ranches.
Right.
And I just thought, you know, they were burning the forest then. And the idea that this started just recently, I think someone, maybe, I don't know when your show said this started 3 or 4 years ago.
No,
it started generations
ago. A long
ago.
Time ago.
Okay, well then
it's never been done on this scale before, but you're right.
Well, I don't know what the scale was in the 1970s, but yeah, it's a result of then. Yeah, so I think you're probably right on the scale. Thanks again. I'll get off the air.
All right. Hey, thank you for the
Thanks
call.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much to consider right now, and this goes back to my earlier comment about why the decisions we make in the next few years are going to have so many long-lasting implications. For virtually every aspect of life, political, personal, communal, that leftists and progressives care about, virtually everything is at stake right now.
I would agree. I think that it's really important to devise a strategy within the system of unfortunately what I consider to be a capitalist system of politics with the so-called Democrats and the so-called Republicans, neither of which are really Democratic or Republican.
No, he said cryptically.
Well, come on. We can discuss that endlessly, but you know.
Yeah, it's true. All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We got some time here before the end of the show if you'd like to get a voice in. Joe, what do you think about my premise that the Democrats have to be the instrument of progressives right now?
I think there's no choice realistically right now. I think that what we all need to do is consider two things. We should listen to the theoretical and serious criticisms of the system and ideas for changing it. And that would include people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie, really. And we really have to try not to have the old boys of the Democratic Party dominate the party. But
the old boys, emphasis on boys.
It's boys, yes. Yeah. Well, a man who is a little touchy-feely. I think that's true. But we cannot let the ideal get in the way of the good in a situation where there really is an onrushing fascist effort to take over the United States.
That's a very good point. There is no perfect candidate. And don't hold out for one because you will be forever disappointed.
Well, I think it's not that they're perfect or not perfect. The argument is, well, people won't vote for someone of the left. Well, of course, the tactics of the dominant media is to characterize people, suggesting things that are characteristic of capitalism in the rest of the world, and create the idea that somehow this is equivalent to old-time Soviet communism or some kind of weird socialism. It's not. It's really not. The idea of giving people a living wage, the idea of giving people health care, the idea of giving them opportunities with education and so on, that's not left or right. That's rational.
Yes, I would agree with that. Let's go to Justine. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to give you guys a call, say thank you for the show. And I'm hearing you calling out for women. I've never called into the radio before. So.
Oh, well, thank you for calling us.
Yes, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the way that I think fear informs the way people kind of attach themselves to a certain economic system, for example.
Sure.
I think that using fear to guide us in this election is going to lead to, continuing problems that we are already seeing. It's the time to be courageous now. It's the time to look to someone who has the ability, like Bernie Sanders, to show us even a glimmer of what another system could look like. I think people, the more broken and lost and fearful people are in our system and capitalism and the kind of society that has developed around it, is particularly good at disconnecting people from each other, from the earth, from reality and, who we are as a species. And the more broken down you are, the more you turn towards something you already know. And I think that's where a lot of people's allegiance to capitalism comes from. And I think that as Democrats, as people that are left-leaning, it's really our job to fight for the furthest, most progressive candidates we can while we can. And what I'm just hearing is a lot of people already giving in to more capitalist, less progressive candidates when they don't have to yet.
Agreed.
I hear people assuming that Trump's going to win no matter what. And I think it's time to... And, as people of Portland, white folks, cis folks, it's more than ever our job to put our money where our mouth is, to put our bodies in the line, to join the efforts of Antifa, to show that there is a real resistance here. We are going to defend our brothers and sisters, and we're going to fight for the politics that will best serve the most marginalized people, as long as we have the option to do so. And I think just giving up at this point already is something we absolutely have to push against with our families and with our friends, with our communities, our coworkers, and just have our voices be heard.
Well, I want to thank you. I want to be clear. I think Abe and I both fundamentally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, that was so well said. I'm really pleased you called up today. Thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I also want to say really quickly, this sort of is inspired also by, the women in Congress, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, the odds were stacked against her, and, it was an incredible grassroots victory.
Yeah.
And now there's, this emerging energy in our government, and it's already there in our country. It just needs to be awakened, inspired, and organized. And one thing I'm doing to kind of help unite women, people who identify as women who happen to be singers, I'm going to start a resistance revival chorus in Portland. There's one in New York City. It's a group. It was founded in part by some women who were organizers of the Women's March but wanted to take their politics to into the musical realm and bring joy as an act of resistance. So I'm founding one of these choruses in Portland, and I wanted to make the first announcement on KBOO to invite anyone who's interested in joining to email resistancerevivalpdx@gmail.com.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah. The email to contact for our first rehearsal is resistancerevivalpdx@gmail.com.
Well,
rehearsal will be on October 10th.
I'm really glad you're doing that. I think that's very important. I am not concerned about how many people call on the show, male or female, because I know the way in which talk radio works, unfortunately, has always been dominated by men. That doesn't make me happy. It makes me unhappy. But I don't expect, even on KBOO, that there's going to be an equity between men and women calling. However, mm-hmm. I really wish there were more women calling us, and I want to be clear about that.
Yes, yes. And I appreciate you guys. I really do think you hold a platform where women are very much called to and invited, and it's still very nerve-wracking to do so. And I just appreciate you guys very much.
Hey, thank you for the call.
Yeah, that was a good call.
Yeah, that was a very good call.
I guess I can say that.
Yeah, this is a good show. We have really smart listeners. I'm really grateful to them.
I think so. And I think even when I disagree with them, they're really smart.
Yeah. I don't know if we talk too much.
Well, of course we talk too much. It's our show. Come on.
Yeah, all right, all right. Well, thanks to everybody who called in today. You know, I want to echo what our last caller, Justine, said. Is now is not the time to give up. Now is not the time to be complacent. We need to push and push and push.
Particularly in the period where their candidates are being selected.
Yes, indeed.
This is the time. Now, whether or not after that we're all betrayed and we end up with a Biden or something and we have to go with the well, that's a different question.
Yeah, but that's an open question right now. Yes. And the harder we push, the less likely that outcome is.
Well, I noticed that he keeps making gaffes and touching people and stuff. And he might be thrown out.
All right, this has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hello, KBOO members. Thank you for being a part of our amazing community. Please join us this year at Mic to the People, our annual election meeting. Do you want to help steer KBOO in a positive direction this fall? Plan on attending the annual election meeting, Mic to the People, September 14th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater and make your voice heard. Cast your vote by 1 p.m. at the event and enjoy refreshments and live entertainment with local musicians West Coast Black Bear and Izzy BM. Hear a report back from your board of directors and get to know this year's candidates. Record your fondest memories of KBOO in a minute or less at the Mic to the People booth. This is an all-ages and disability-affirmative event. Again, that's the annual election meeting, Mic to the People, Saturday, September 14th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, featuring West Coast Black Bear and Izzy BM. More information can be found at kboo.fm/meeting2019. Remember, your voice matters.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, we hear from Michael Yates, labor educator and editorial director of the Monthly Review Press, on why unions matter. At 10 on Flashpoints, the West Coast premiere of the documentary The Corporate Coup d'Etat, which a Hollywood Reporter calls a horror film of the most realistic kind. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D-May speaks with co-producers Anna Nicholas and Brian Schnipper of the play Mala by Melinda Lopez. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews abstract artist Amy Bernstein. All of these KBOO programs